minds are weak. We want to take the easy path. We want to not suffer. When we attempt to push beyond what we believe we are capable of, our brains fight against us.
This mortal form has grown weak. I need sustenance.
This is why endurance sports are incredibly difficult. Yes, there is the physical element. Your body needs to be in prime physical condition, but it is our brains and will we are fighting against every time we put one foot in front of the other. To be great endurance athletes, we must accept that our brains will be the hurdle and start the process of understanding how to leap over it in each of our individual circumstances. Welcome back, imposters, to the You're Not Qualified podcast. I am your host, Courtney Heater, and today I chat with Rafael Hidalgo, a finisher of the 100-mile UTMB race. And for your bit of trivia, just to get our minds around the difficulty of this race, in 2022, only 68% of those who started this race actually finished it. In 2023, Courtney DeWalter swept with a win, and she said it best. Anytime we are given the opportunity to try something difficult or crazy, we should absolutely take it. And she ran three ultras that summer, winning the Triple Crown. While I am not saying we can all do that, I am not saying we can all do that. Set your running shoes out before you continue this episode, because after, I know you will want to go and hit the pavement immediately. You ready to go chat with Rafael? Let's go.
Go now, while I still allow it.
All right, so this afternoon, well, actually, what time is it in the Bahamas for you?
It's 6 o'clock.
Okay, afternoon, evening, great. It's 3 p.m. here in Seattle. We're talking with Rafael, who is going to be telling us all about his race of one of the most popular races in the world to do the ultra marathons, and talking about the UTMB and everything that inspired him to go on 100-mile race and what it means to him now and how it has ignited further passion in him. So Rafael, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks a lot for the invite, Courtney. Great to be here.
All right, so let's just go ahead and jump into the race. And I'm sure that people have heard about it, but can you tell us about what makes it special in general?
Yeah. So basically, UTMB is the Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc, so 100-mile race with 33,000 feet of cumulative climbs. And it's well known because it's pretty much the Super Bowl of ultra marathon racing worldwide. So the best runners worldwide congregates to Chamonix, a little village in France, very close to Switzerland and Italy. So that's what makes it magical as well. It's a full loop, as opposed to some other ultra races who are an out and back or have a point-to-point course. This one is a full loop around Europe's tallest summit, which is the Mont Blanc, which culminates at 4,800 and something meters. Sorry, I'm not good at converting into feet, but it's the tallest summit in Europe. And the beauty of it is that you actually get to cross three countries. So you start in France, then you go into Italy, then Switzerland, and then back into France. So I think the combination of the best runners in the world coming there, the foot of Her Majesty the Mont Blanc for a full loop in three countries is pretty epic. It was created in 2003, if I'm not mistaken, and it's really gained a lot of traction since to now become the race that every runner in the world or all the elites want to win one day.
Incredible. Is there other distances you can run for
yes.
this? Okay.
Yes, there are. Initially, there wasn't. It started just as a 100-mile race, if I'm not mistaken. But now today, you can actually select different distances. So you have the 100-mile Queen race, but you also have another race called TDS. So there's all these funny acronyms. So TDS is Tour du Duc de Savoie, which takes a different route. and is slightly shorter. I think it's 140 kilometers or something like that, but it's much more technical, a little bit more dangerous as well. So that's what has created a little bit more buzz around the races, because unfortunately there were some negative press on some fatalities as well in the last couple of years. So it's a sport which is also quite dangerous. So that TDS race unfortunately suffered a casualty a couple of years ago. So they have the TDS, and then they have the 100 kilometer race as well. They have 50 kilometers, and now they actually have 20 and 10 kilometers. So actually what they're trying to do, because now it's become a World Series, it branched out. So initially it just started as a one-off race, and now it's actually not only the biggest race with a number of distances for all the tastes and needs of people, but they've actually created a World Series. So now UTMB is a big brand, a global brand that has now bought a number of races globally under the brand UTMB, and you can basically run those and get qualification points for the master race. So that's what also creates a lot of appeal, because there's a lot of demand for that race, but not enough places. So you actually need to qualify for it. So it's a long journey to get in there, but that's why they made it also more accessible to people who can't do 100 miles or who can't qualify for it. You got shorter distances and still be part of an incredible party. And to come back to your first question of why is it so popular, is it's because of the atmosphere during that weekend. This Chamonix is a beautiful little city in the next to the Mont Blanc with a beautiful view, loads of sports going on, so very young and buzzing. And during that week, it's absolutely packed with people all trail running and looking forward to seeing that epic start, which is also very well known to be one of the most emotional starts to any race worldwide. I had a bit of a tear as well on the start line. So it's, yeah, they make a real magical event. It's very different to a lot of other races I've taken part in, which are much more, it's the run. Here it's the party, it's the atmosphere, it's the people who are supporting you. You have people following you all the way around the course in three countries. So it's that's what makes it absolutely magical. And it's great that they have different distances, so that even runners who are not wanting to do ultra races can actually do much shorter ones as well and still be part of the party.
100%. It does sound magical. And there is, with the emotional aspect of it, not only if you're having to qualify, but even just the hurdles of financially being able to attend a race like that, figuring out how to get to the other part of the world, if you're even from different parts of Europe or if you're American. And that in itself would be a big deal to be able to go over and participate. So it's like you finally get there after anticipating. And if you're doing 100 miles or even like the tiers below that, that's a lot of preparation. It's so much work, which we will get a lot into, but just physically and mentally, it's challenging.
It is, but it's also for international runners, and there are actually a lot of international runners in that race. I think last year there was about 120 different nationalities. It was like the whole world was basically there. It was incredible. Most representatives of countries of France, I think England, the US as well, I think is in the top three or four most represented countries at UTMB. And I saw a lot of Americans there, Canadians as well, Australians. And then it goes even as far out as Japan, Thailand, China. It's really an international event. And it is great in that sense as well, because you get to meet a lot of people from different walks of life. And especially on the 100 miles, you sometimes get a lot of time to chit-chat with them, since it's such a long race. It can take up to 46 hours to complete.
Oh, God. 33,000 feet in gain, you said?
That's correct.
An insane elevation gain in even 100 miles. That is so much. Do you remember if it is pretty much sequestered to a certain portion of the mileage? Is it spread out really nicely?
It's spread out. So you get the climbs and the descents pretty much the whole way through. Some of them are more grueling than others. So it's not like you've done the first part and you're like, wow, I'm done with the climbs and now I can just...
Here comes the flats.
Yeah, it's just flat. No, it's up and down all the way through. It's and the accumulated gain is actually higher than the Mount Everest. So you actually, during the race, if you just put it piece by piece next to each other, you've climbed higher than the Mount Everest during the race, whilst also completing 100 miles flat. So yeah, it's a big...
So next stop, Everest.
Yeah, that's another challenge. I got to negotiate with my wife that.
I would have to too. my whole family. Yeah. In your bio, you did mention that you have a just innate desire to understand what drives humans. And I was curious if this is like a chicken and the egg situation. Was it your goal to run this race? And was that born from your desire to understand what drives humans? Or did that desire come as an outcome of your race? And you're just like, wait a second, how the hell did I do this?
No, the desire to understand better what motivates us came before the racing. Basically, I wanted to see to what extent I have the force of character and the grit to get through difficulties. Probably because my father had a bit of a tough life. He was born in one of the poorest regions in Colombia and managed to pull himself out of that poverty, traveled the world, and finally land in Switzerland. He wrote a book about all his adventures. And I had it easy. I was born in Switzerland. I had education spoon-fed to me whilst he had to fight for it. And I was dyslexic at school, faced difficulties there, but managed to grind through, get to university. And so somewhere deep down, I knew I had probably the same grit as him, but I never really felt that I had a big enough challenge to really test myself. I always had dreams and aspirations, but for some reason, they never really worked out, but not because so much because of me, but because of external factors. And I said, I want to take on something which I know nothing about, for which I'm totally unprepared for physically. And that's when I think it was during COVID, I was watching different videos and I fell on one, which was from a guy called Billy Yang, who's a film producer, but he's also an ultra runner. And he did a film on the why of 100 miles. And that just totally resonated in me. And I said, man, that's incredible. It's completely crazy to do 100 miles. And I said, hey, that's what I want to do now. I want to see if I'm capable of doing that. And I'd done a little bit of running, but not much. I always hated running. And I'd only done one race, an ultra race, which was the first race I did, in the same optic to test myself. So my first ever race was, I think it was 29 miles and 8,000 feet of elevation. And I went from a treadmill to that distance and that elevation. And that was probably one of, after UTMB, probably one of the most difficult experiences I've had because I was underprepared and still managed to finish it. So I said, yes, I have the grit. But once I finished that race, I said, maybe one day I'll do something else. And it took a few years before I got inspired by that film to do 100 miles. And I said, okay, now I got to do it. But it's going to be much more preparation, much more planning, much more organization. And I can't just do it from one year to the next. I'll need a 3-year plan to do it. So from the moment I saw it during COVID, when we could only do is run, I started my preparation there and then eventually worked towards which was my goal race.
I'm like just so excited because this means that you don't have a very heavy athletic background. No. And you're literally just, okay, I'm going to run this 100-mile race. When did you run the 27 miler before COVID?
So the first time I'd ever done that was in 2017, I think it was. And I did that once a year. So it was a little objective. So the first time it was more to show my children that through grit and determination, you can do incredible things. And for sure, with the little preparation I had for that race and to finish it, I showed them to never give up, even though I wasn't prepared for it because I'd only run on the treadmill. But then I liked the atmosphere and the race. And it was in Zermatt, which is a beautiful village in the Swiss Alps. My wife loves it as well. So it was a bit of an excuse to go up there. And I did that race and suffered each time. But once you've done it 2-3 times, you can do it. So now I needed another challenge. And that came up way after. So during COVID. So I really seriously started running in 2020 and 21. I think that was when I really started running. And then in 23, I was doing 100 miles and climbing 33,000 feet.
That is quite insane. If I'm thinking about the amount of time it takes to prep your body for not even that kind of like impact endurance on it, but mentally, I feel like it's harder for me. And like, sometimes I'm like, maybe it's 50-50 split between mental and physical, but other times when I'm actually on a mountain, I'm like, no, this is much more mental because I can go as slow as I need, but I need to keep moving. And that's the hard part. But we are also, as you said too, we're naturally lazy. I am naturally lazy and I have a hard time motivating myself even to get out and do my walking and get my steps in every day. When I'm not training, I feel really lazy. But we have to get over it and we have to figure out how to defeat that. So what have you discovered in terms of getting over that like natural inclination to just sit on the couch?
Yeah, I think there was 3 steps in the process. I think first it was the body. So trying to get the body ready. And I think with shorter distances, it's a little easier because it's not so difficult on the body. But then you reach a certain point where you're not physically prepared to do the distances. So then it becomes in the head. So you're trying to convince yourself that, you know, you can do it. And then the third step is your mind is actually telling you, you're going way beyond its limits. And I discovered a strength that I never knew I had, and it's in the soul. And this is what is interesting for me and what I'm currently exploring even more. And as I go into my future, my next ultra races, I'll be digging even more. And I'm reading a lot on biology and psychology and different kind of elements, which I'm now trying to piece together. And actually even religion and myths now, stories of sacrifice, stories of pilgrimage, and a bunch of different things, which I'm piecing together, because that's where I think a lot of our strengths comes from. When you have an objective or a goal or a dream that really deeply resonates within you, that's when you find some strength that you never knew you had. And during UTMB, this is a little bit of a revelation that I had. And just to know, I'm not any super religious person or anything. I never went to church or anything. But the more I'm reading about it, the more I'm reading about the religions and myths and the stories of a hero, the hero journeys, the more I can see a lot of what is explained in there very relevant to the type of adventure that I've been setting myself on. And during UTMB, I remember we're past the first night and we've done 50 miles already, and I'm absolutely destroyed physically. My mind has been telling me to give up pretty much every step of the way after mile 35 or something like that. And I'm sleep deprived because I've done one night without sleeping. Everybody on that trail is sleeping on the side of the trail or sitting down, and my mind is telling me to do the same. And I finally reach one of the aid stations and I sit down and dark thoughts are going through my head. People are talking to the volunteers, asking them where's the best place to pull out of the race, whether they have to go back down to the previous aid station or continue to the next one. So I'm really polluted by negative thoughts going through my mind. So at that moment, it was very easy to just choose the easy path that my mind was pushing me into and saying, I'm just going to give up and seek comfort. And then a lady came along and she basically told me, we were in Italy at that point, and she saw my name, she saw my flag, and she started speaking to me in French and said, come on, Raphael, let's get going. And I thought it was a word of encouragement. So I was saying, yeah, but I'm a little bit tired. I'm just resting a little bit. And then she says, you don't understand me. If you don't go now, you'll be out of the race, because there's time barriers during UTMB. So if you don't reach a certain place before a certain time, you're cut off and you're basically eliminated. And at that point, something happened in me deep inside. And all of a sudden, I got up. I had no more pain and I had no more dark thoughts. The sleep deprivation had disappeared just because she was basically telling me, Raphael, your dream that you've been working towards is now slipping out of your grasp. And just that thought of realizing that all the work and all the preparation that I've put in and all the reasons that I've been putting into this, which was to show my children through hard work, you can achieve great things, but also to inspire other people, to show them that some things that you think you would never be able to do, you actually can reach, you know, heights that you'd never expected. And the thought of that slipping out of my grasp, just because I was lazy, I was not going to make the cut. So I all of a sudden found an energy that I didn't know I had. And I absolutely ran my socks off in the next section. I actually passed 130 people during that section of the trail, which was flattish. And that was after like 55 miles of running, 15,000 feet of climbing. And I was able to put myself back into the race. But for me at that point, the long-term pain of not being able to complete my dream was way grander than the short-term physical pain that I had to suck up to be able to keep my dream alive. So that was for me an important moment. And I experienced a second moment like that further into the race when it became even more difficult. And that's why I found it super interesting to explore that dimension, which I think we all know is there. We feel it, but it's very difficult to articulate. And I want to try and put words on there and articulate it and make some links with a lot of the stories that we've been hearing or even that we watch on television, like the story of the knight looking for a treasure in a deep, dark cave and having to confront the dragon. So having to confront our fears. Yeah. And growing in the process. And actually studies have shown that by confronting what you fear the most and taking on self-initiated challenges, your genes actually code for new proteins and they create new neural structures in your body. So you actually do become a different person. So it's not just a psychological or a spiritual transformation. It's a real physiological transformation, because your DNA does actually undergo transformation because you've been exposed and gone out of your comfort zone. So that actually is, I thought, was really eye-opening to me. And that's what really interests me, to really articulate how you're motivated, why you're motivated, and to what extent it can push you to greater heights.
That the scientific behind it is so fascinating. And I love to say that you are training to be uncomfortable. You're training your body to understand how to be uncomfortable consistently. And like you said, you will become better at being uncomfortable. And not only that, you'll just become more motivated to just figure it out and continue going because, yeah, you're creating like a different mindset, a different person. And it's just so fascinating the more hard things we do. So everybody just go do hard things.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. What you need the most lies behind what you fear the most. And what we often fear is failure, disappointment, and difficulty in general. But that's where the growth lies.
It is. It's in all of the uncomfortable spots. That's exactly where it is. Was that woman real?
Yeah, you see her in the film, actually, because I forgot to turn off my GoPro. Okay. And luckily I did, because it captured the moments she actually spoke to me and the moments that I realized, like, whoa, this is my dream is slipping out of my grasp. So I was happy that I had forgotten to switch it off.
Because we're just talking about like the religious aspect. I was like, I wonder if she was a ghost or an angel or something along those lines that you really needed in the moment. But she was human form. Yeah. To get you to keep going. But in the whole time you were saying that, all I was thinking of is, okay, only 15,000-ish feet that you've accomplished up to that point. You had half of the elevation left, but you still had to get back in the game.
Yeah. And that was the tough part. And the energy came back. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel any pain anymore. And I didn't have any sleep deprivation anymore, even though it came back later in the day, because that was only the first night. So the biggest issue was the second night. That was talking about seeing things that didn't exist. While in the second night, I did have hallucinations, which I thought would not happen to me, because I'm too rational for that. I said, it's only the crazy people who see hallucinations. But it even happened to me on that night. I saw stuff that didn't exist. I saw a house with people dancing in it. And I really thought it was real, because we were close to a village in Switzerland. So I thought maybe they are partying in a village, in a chalet over there. But no, it was all hallucinations. And it showed me to what extent the mind, again, is not as strong as we think, because it was trying everything in its power to derail me from my progress and to tell me to give up. And it was telling me, you're pushing your body way beyond what it can do. And I was trying to prove it wrong, that, you know, we can actually go much further than that, because we're driven by an internal fire, which is much stronger, and it comes from the soul. And that's when I realized that the soul is much stronger than the mind and the body.
Yeah, you have a goal. You have a dream. You have to, it's eerie. The dancing people, a little eerie.
Yeah, the dancing people and the rocks, the stones on the floor. I could see the shapes, the shades of gray, which are a little bit darker. They were all moving around, if they were fluids. So they're like moving around in the rock, and it was like really weird. And I was telling myself, this is not true. This does not exist. And I was rubbing my eyes, trying to convince myself that I was not seeing that. And yet when I opened my eyes, I could still see it. It was extremely powerful. I was like, wow, I can't even brush it off, even though I'm trying to convince myself and condition myself to make my brain realize that it's not what is there. And yet I could see it. So it was, it was quite eerie. It was a really weird situation and one of the most incredible nights I've ever experienced. But that's what I went there for. I went exactly for that, because I've done other races where I did one full night. One full night is difficult, but it's doable. The second night without sleep, man, that is a whole nother ball game. That was very tough. And I was sleepwalking. My eyes were shutting by themselves. I was trying to find different solutions to try and stay awake. I was even sat down to look at my phone, get that blue light to wake up my brain. I was speaking to other runners. Well, there were not very many people, unfortunately, at that point, because we were all so spread out. So what saved me in the end was a bit of coffee and chia seeds. That helped me as well.
get that caffeine IV.
Yeah.
Get it in there. Exactly. What is the setup for sleeping in a 100-mile race anyways? Do they have tents you can stop in?
They have a few aid stations, I think, that had some sleeping facilities. But I was so close to being timed out from the race that I couldn't benefit from them. So I was just arriving in those aid stations, refilling my bottles and having something to eat. I only once was able to shut my eyes on the table, but I wasn't really sleeping. But yes, you have some aid stations which have a bit of a tent and some sort of beds or something like that to lay down. But very few people actually sleep, because you have so much adrenaline pumping through you that it's absolutely impossible to relax enough to get to sleep. And then even if you do manage to relax and get to sleep, it's super difficult to get back up and running again. So I think the best solution is not to sleep, is just to rest. And anyway, I think those who were quicker than me, because most of them were, I was amongst the last batch to finish the race, they finish in much less time. So they don't get that sleep deprivation effect that the slower runners have to suck up, because I finished the race in, I think, nearly 46 hours, 45 hours. And the maximum is 46 and a half hours. So I was extremely close to being.
You just made it.
Just
that
made it.
That is incredible. You powered through. That's what that was. You
yeah,
made
I
it happen.
I made it happen, but I was very stressed by the time barriers, because I was each time very close to being timed out.
Oh,
so
yeah,
that was not easy.
But good for you. It's absolutely incredible. And now you have this amazing story of you did it. You pushed through, persevered. And the quote, becoming is more important than being, I think is a great time to dissect that more. What does this idea mean to you?
So for me, becoming is more important than being, is the journey is more important than the destination. So we have a goal and we think that we're going to be reaching a state of eternal utopia once we've reached that goal. But in actual fact, where we really get the happiness is on that voyage. Overcoming those challenges along the way and becoming a better person, learning, discovering. And as studies have shown, that happiness is more defined as the constant movement towards a valued goal rather than the goal in and of itself, in the sense that each time you've overcome a challenge, you get a spike of dopamine. So the sort of reward chemical, the happy chemical. And that's what I think is, if you manage to get that throughout your life by setting, yeah, a big, hairy, audacious goal that you want to go towards, a sort of shining star, a true north that you need to direct yourself towards. It's a long journey. It's a tough journey. And during that journey, you learn things, you discover things, and you learn a lot about yourself, because you got to confront a lot of challenges, as we mentioned, and often those challenges scare us. For me, concretely in the trail running, if we take a concrete example rather than a metaphor, I really had to confront one of my fears, which is heights. I have a horrible fear of heights. And yet I was taking on these trails and high, you know, mountains with trails, which were some of them might quite sharp drop off, big falls. Or I was traversing suspension bridges, which were hanging hundreds of feet above the ground. And like in life, you face a challenge and you have a choice. You either decide to give up and you will never get to the other side of that challenge where bliss lies, and or you take it on and you don't become less afraid of it, but you become braver. And actually, in the studies, they've shown that psychologists who help people overcome their fears, they expose them voluntarily to little chunks of their fears. But it doesn't make them less afraid of them. It just makes them braver. And this is what I was trying to do as well, is by traversing these suspension bridges, I was becoming a little bit braver. I'm still scared of heights, but now I know I have the courage to take it on and suck it up and get to the other side to get closer to my goal. And that's a bit of a metaphor for life as well, in the sense that you will be facing challenges. And a lot of those challenges are things that scare you. And you always have a choice. And if you choose to tackle it and overcome it, you do have a transformational experience in there. Not only, as we said, spiritual or psychological, but actually physiological, as your body transforms by having been exposed to a new environment, which creates a whole chemical and biological effect in your being. And you do feel different. And that's why, again, a lot of religions or past civilizations had this concept of pilgrimage. You needed to take your roots and to out of your community, leave your family and go on to an adventure and go to a dark place, and you'll have loads of adventures on that journey. And then you come back a different person. And that's the journey that I'm taking on myself.
There's this lovely little girl that I like to follow on Instagram, and she is learning to snowboard. I think she started when she was really young, and now she's like around 5. But there was this video of her and her dad, and she was trying to go off this new jump. And her dad told her, remember what we say if we're scared. And the little girl's, do it scared. And I'm like, I'm going to take that through the rest of my life. Do it scared.
Yeah. There we go.
Just push on through. The challenge and the training, as you're talking about, a lot of endurance athletes will tell people that aren't an endurance athletes that or athletics that The challenge is not performing the race, though. Honestly, in a 100-mile race, that's definitely part of the challenge, I'd think. But the challenge is in the training. So we haven't touched really on your training for this yet. We knew that you only had a few years. So can you give us an idea of what you went through?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's true that the race, even though it's difficult for sure, for all the reasons we just mentioned, for me, it was a celebration of all the preparation which was carried out over the years, because it's true, the real sort of test of your determination and your grit is all the training which goes up and to the lead up to the race, in terms of getting up in the morning early. It's cold, it's raining, you don't want to go, but you go. Or again, you have a choice. You either decide to take it full on, or you give up. And it's true, that training was difficult, because ultra running is all about time on feet, and time on feet is time. And when you have a full-time job, you have a family. For me, that was one of the biggest challenges, is to try and fit it within my schedule. And the second one was beating that little voice in my head telling me, leave it for tomorrow, just stay in bed, or just stay 5 minutes more, or 10 minutes more. And every day was the same thing. My mind was just trying to play tricks on me not to go, always trying to find an excuse not to go out there in the mornings or at lunchtimes or over the weekends. And then when you have family commitments as well, you're trying to balance all that. It's definitely not easy. And I didn't, despite having done, I don't know how many thousands of miles I ran and how many thousands of feet I climbed, I was still not ideally prepared for such an adventure, because the 100 miles are so grueling. You need to spend 15 hours a week, ideally, on your feet in the run up to the race. And that's something I just couldn't do. I was, around 8, 9 hours a week. And that was about as much as I could fit in. And I suffered quite considerably during the race. But yeah, and then I suffered injuries as well. So that put a setback on my training as well. So I had to, that's the morale takes a big hit as well, between the minds telling you not to go to train, not to train when you're feeling okay. And then when you're injured, it tells you give up, you just, it's not worth it. So I remember I had several injuries. I had sprained ankles, I had shin splints, and I had to try and find ways to compensate for that. So I was doing like indoor cycling in the winter, or I was, yeah, pretty much that was the only thing I was doing, actually. It was only the cycling aspect, to do cross training whilst I was injured. I didn't have any swimming, because swimming would be a good alternative. Here I can do it in the Bahamas, but at that point I wasn't. So yeah, it's not easy to find the time to do it. But then if you have the objective and you can organize yourself, it's anything is possible. When there's a will, there's a way. So everybody can fit it in, even if it means getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, if that's when you have
You got to
to
do
do it.
it.
But it's all about sacrifices. And that's, again, to come back to the sort of religious dimension, the sacrifice, which is work, the definition of work for me, sacrificing the present for the long term, sacrificing the short term pleasures for the long term goal. And that was what it was taking, e.g., no more Netflix at night. You go to bed early, get up early, no more lions. Weekend in the mornings, you get up because you want to do it before the family wakes up, so you can be with them for the rest of the weekend, because you still want to be a good father and a good husband. So you need to do sacrifices elsewhere. And that was Netflix, sleeping, and lunch breaks during the week. So no more lunch breaks, just running and running, or weight training, or whatever it might be. But yeah, I think that's the main message to take away. I think it's, if you want to do it, you can do it, but you'll need to do the sacrifices that go with it.
Yeah, you always have the time. It's just it has to be a priority. Like you
Yeah.
prioritize what's important. And it is really hard to think about getting up at 3 a.m. to start training.
Yeah.
I've definitely gotten up at 3 a.m. for alpine starts and to go on like sunrise hikes. But if I was just training, like just to go for a run, I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I could get myself out of bed, but I say that and I'm like, of course, if it meant a lot, I could. But
Yeah, no, 3 o'clock is pushing it. But
oh.
here in the Bahamas, I do 4:30. But I do 4:30 because I go to bed at 8:30 p.m. And during the day here in the Bahamas, especially in the summer, it gets so hot. You can't even run. It's really unbearable. So the best moment is before the sun rises. So that's one of the motivations to get up at 4:30.
So if you were to do another 100-mile race, I assume you probably will you put in more miles during the week? Is that what you'll change?
Yeah, actually, I have one lined up for this year in October in California. So now all my races will be on this side of the Atlantic. So that's going to be a new adventure for me, because historically I've done all of them in Switzerland, France, or Italy. So this time it'll be in the US. So I'm actually next month doing 100K and then in October, 100 miles. So what I've done is trying to reorganize myself to be able to try and do a little bit more mileage. But I don't have the elevation gain here because we don't have the mountains. So I'm going to a gym and using the StairMass, those stairs which go to infinity. They're just this escalator
They're
thing.
They're my nemesis. Yeah.
Oh, you don't like them?
No.
Yeah, that's
I spent hours and hours on those things.
There we go. Yeah, I don't like it either, but it's the only way I can get a bit of a climb on a flat island. So I think that's what I've changed. What else have I changed? I'm going to try and do some more cycling as well, if I can get a bicycle, to try and do some cross training and more weights, I think. So that's pretty much my plan. I'm not going to change a whole lot. It's just I did quite a lot for UTMB, and I don't think I can do a lot more. I've done a couple of marathons as well, and half marathons this year, which I hadn't done last year. So that was good. So yeah, it's just about mileage, trying to squeeze in any mileage that you can at any moment. That's time on feet. That's key for ultra running.
Time on feet. You definitely had a lot of mental challenges in the UTMB and like the 30, 40 mile range, like we were talking about, when you're like, I have to pick this up. How do you think now you're going to train mental resilience a little bit deeper? Or do you think you have it dialed?
Now I know my mind is very weak, so it's not going to surprise me as it did during UTMB, because I had a feeling that was what it was. And because I had done a lot of other preparation races, so I was used to it trying to derail me. But it's UTMB and 100-mile race with two sleepless nights. I underestimated, I think, the extent to which the mind really can go in overdrive to do anything to derail you to the point of having hallucinations. And that's something which, unfortunately, now I know it's going to happen. So it's not going to take me by surprise. I know how to handle it now as well. And it's pretty much just grinding through it, having a bit of coffee. And I mean, you find a few tips and tricks that are very concrete. But as long as what's worrying me more is the power of the objective, the power of the dream, and the power of the goal. Because for UTMB, it was extremely powerful. Now, I don't feel it as powerful as it was for UTMB, because it was my first 100 miler. I was doing a whole series of videos on there that I started on YouTube since the first ever trail race I did in 2021. So it was the culmination of 2-3 years of working. Now I've done it. So the objective is probably not as grand this year as it was last year. So that's the only thing which is worrying me, is to what extent it's sufficiently powerful enough to pull me out of the dark zone. When the going will get tough, and it will get tough.
What's the elevation gain for the 100 miler in the States?
There'll be less. There'll be half. I think it's 15,000 or 16,000. So there's less of it, but there's going to be, so it's going to be flatter, but we're going to have to run more, and the cutoffs are adapted to it accordingly. So I don't think it's going to be a 46 and a half hour. Yeah. So it's going to be, I'm going to have to run a lot more, I think. So it'll be interesting.
I love it. So it is. It's so interesting that you say that you're mentally weak and you know that, when I'm just sitting here and I'm like, no, I get that the hallucinations are wild and that it was really hard to push you, and the power of your goal probably was a huge beacon of light there for you. But I would give a little bit more credit to you and say that I think that you will figure it out in the moment again, once you're deep in that pain cave, and you'll pull yourself out, or maybe you'll have another walking angel come and tell you that you got to keep it going, and then you'll get coffee and a snack and you'll be good. But good luck.
Thank you. No, it's going to be a nice adventure. And anyway, now my objective is has a bigger purpose as well, because now I really want to spread the word. That's why I'm on this podcast, and that's why I'm doing other podcasts as well. I also did a presentation this last weekend at a high school to try and convey these learnings that I had during these races, to really the importance of having that dream and allowing ourselves to dream big, think big, believe big, and not to give up because the objective is too big and that we'll never make it. As we say, shoot for the moon, and even if you miss it, you'll land amongst the stars. you'll still be in movement, and that constant movement towards a valued goal will create that happiness with those dopamine spikes. But you need to be in movement. You need to set a goal. As they say, if you don't have a goal, you can't score. You're just navigating in the seas with the winds and the currents without any real direction. Trying to convey to those children, or young adults nearly, that they need to set themselves an objective which really resonates or deeply resonates with them, that is something that gives them goosebumps, because it will take them on a path, a journey, a pilgrimage of growth by confronting the challenges that we mentioned. And that's what really motivates me now, is to try and convey those messages and continue understanding it better on my end, to be able to refer to concrete examples of how I experienced it along this journey. So I think hopefully that takes it to another level for me, because initially it was doing that race and showing that with hard work, we can do it if we believe in a big goal. But now for me, the guiding star is that it's really to spread the words as much as possible, to dream and to go back to our childhoods, what made us dream when we were watching our hero cartoons or films, Disney films with this hero journey, and to read these stories of even religious heroes from the Bible and other stories which have deep meaning, and that I totally disregarded when I was a kid because it didn't resonate, so I didn't understand them. But there's a lot of parallels we can do with our own lives and our own hero journey, and we're the hero of our own life. And sometimes we need to try and think, what do I want to write about when I'm on my deathbed? What are people going to remember me for? And what do I want to remember my life as being? And was it worth it? And did I have any impact on anybody? Did I help anybody in the process? And I think that's pretty much where I am today.
For those people that come to you and they say, okay, what actually does set me on fire, similar to you, and I want to run and push myself, but they don't believe that they can. They're like, I could never do that. I could never do what you do. What do you say to them?
Believe in yourself, because you're capable of a lot more than you think, but you don't know it yet. And the thing is, there's a lot of potential encapsulated in our DNA. And as long as we don't push ourselves out of our comfort zone, we'll never discover what that potential actually is. And it's in the discomfort and the challenges we mentioned that we really express our full potential. And so I would tell them, you are capable of it. You just don't know it for the moment.
Absolutely. 100%. I don't think we touched on how you did qualify for UTMB. What did you do to qualify?
Yeah, for UTMB at the time, I wanted to sign up. The criteria was to have completed at least 2 62-mile races in the 2 preceding years before UTMB. So that was what was the basis of my plan to get into UTMB when I started in 2020, when I decided, and I set my 2021 and 2022 62-mile races, and you have to complete them. That's what it was at the time. Since then, they changed them a little bit. So you only need to have completed 1 62-mile race within, I think, the 2 previous years, and it has to be part of one of their official list of races. And you need a lottery ball as well, a lottery ticket. So to obtain that, you have to have participated in one of their races as well. So what I did is I had done my 2 62-mile races, so that was fine. I was on the distance side. I was fine. I just needed a lottery ticket. So I went to one of their races in France and did a short 20-kilometer race, got my lottery ticket. And then what I did is, to give my race at UTMB even more depth and purpose, I actually got a solidarity bib. So I was actually raising funds for an organization that brings smiles to children in the hospital. So I think they bring animation and stuff to make them not think about the place they're in, the hospital. So they would make them try and bring a little bit of happiness to them. So I raised funds for that organization. And through that, I got automatic qualification for UTMB. So it was a
win-win.
Yeah. So I was able to, I had the criteria for the distance, had my lottery ticket, and then I had the solidarity bid, which enabled me to qualify automatically for the race.
So good. And giving back to a cause is just, I think, the best way to pursue any endurance, because it's fascinating and you can raise a lot of money for a lot of really good causes. Yeah. If you had to wrap up advice as we're coming to the end of our conversation, if you had to wrap up advice for like how to become an ultra runner, what would you package and give to somebody?
I would say have an objective that resonates. Be clear why you're doing it, because when you know where you're going, you'll know why you're doing it. So for me, it was that. I knew I wanted to be at UTMB, but I knew I wanted to be there because I wanted to spread a deeper message on life in general. And I think if people know their where and why, I think that will lead them to the what and the how. And that's, what's helped me put into practice my plan. So for me, it's be devoted to your objective, be determined, disciplined, and dedicated. For me, it's like the four Ds: dedication, devotion, discipline, and determination to reach your objective. So have a great goal, know why you're doing it, and then know how you're going to do it and what you will do to reach it. So for me, it's pretty much that I would tell them, and to believe in yourself that you're capable of a lot more than what you think.
You really
I never
are.
believed I would be able to do a 100-mile race 3 years ago, and there I am having completed UTMB. It was, but it, the people have to realize that it's a tough ride, but that's what makes it fun. The tough ride is where you discover yourself. I discovered loads of places. I learned a lot about nutrition and stuff that I'd probably never have learned about if I wasn't doing that. Met loads of great people. I learned how to do videos. I learned about psychology, biology, a bunch of different things that I didn't even want to or had set out to learn in the first place. I just went there. It's okay. I want to run, and I want to see if I working hard actually does pay off. And then I learned much more than that.
How has all that you've learned applied to business, family life, and just how's it changed your life?
Oh, it's completely changed my perception on life, as you say, business-wise as well. I think I'm in business and went to business school, and I see what I learned in ultra running has probably taught me a lot more about how to set a vision, how to set a mission of a company, and how to motivate people. And what I realize is that a lot of businesses are doing it totally the wrong way. Us employees, we're all pretending we're motivated by these visions and missions that are defined by these big corporations, but in the end, it's not necessarily the case. And for me, I've always believed that you need to define your why first, but actually, I've come to the conclusion that you don't start with the why, you start with the where, and then you'll know the why. And for me, that's a big learning, both from a business sense, but also from a family sense. And I need to have a destination. Once you have a destination that really inspires you, you will be able to design the course to navigate towards that objective, and you will know why you want to reach it. And for me, from a family perspective, is to become a great father for my children and to convey them the right values. And why? Because I want them to become great people. But my principal objective is to be that great father. I want to be a role model for them and lead by example and show them with practice by that hard work yields results, but hard work comes with difficulty, and we shouldn't shy away from that difficulty because that's where the growth lies. So that's where I want to go, and the why I want to do it. Yeah, it's pretty obvious. I want them to become great people, hopefully to be able to do the same and pass on other values probably to their children and the community at large. So yeah, I think it's changed my perception on which way to take or what questions to ask oneself in life or business. So it's not necessarily start with why, but be clear on where you want to go, and then you'll know why.
Love it. Which questions to ask, when to ask those questions, when to seek answers, when to know to be patient. That's so good. Very good. Where can people find you, Raphael, if they want to know more?
So I'm on Instagram, so they can find me there. I think it's just Rafael Eduardo Hidalgo, and on YouTube, that's where I spend most of my time creating inspirational films. I prefer calling them films than videos because they're actually long form, and I try and make them as deep as possible, touching on a lot of the topics that we've discussed, and hopefully giving it sufficient depth to inspire those who are wanting to go out there and run and see that, yeah, it's not easy for even someone who's done UTMB. It was a tough journey, and it takes a lot of discipline, dedication, and determination to do it, but driven by all the reasons we've already discussed today. So they can find me on YouTube, yeah, Instagram, Facebook as well.
Okay. This has been such an inspiring conversation. I'm probably going to go for a run now. It's very exciting. And then look into UTMB because I'm also like, I could never run 100 miles, but now I'm like, maybe I could run
No,
100
you can.
miles.
You can. You
Maybe I
absolutely
could.
can.
But I really
Absolutely.
appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
No, thanks a lot, Courtney. It was a pleasure sharing, and hopefully speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much for listening to the You're Not Qualified podcast, you capable babes. I'm very excited that you made it to the end of this episode. I would love to hear from you if you feel inspired by the stories that you hear on this podcast. If you feel inspired by this particular one, please drop me a line. I can be reached by email, ynqpod@gmail.com. I am most active on Instagram. The handle is @ynqpod. Please drop me a DM there. I love chatting with you all. Write a comment, anything you'd like. I just want to hear what you think. If you think that you'd be a great fit for this podcast and you want to come on and tell your story of how you overcame imposter syndrome, please get in touch. Or if you know of somebody that you think would also love to tell their story, get them in touch with me. Would love to hear from them. If you like what you hear, I love it when you subscribe. So please do so or follow me, depending on what platform you're listening on. And also leave a review. Spotify does this really fun thing now where you can actually leave a review after a prompt. It's a really exciting way to get engaged. I realized it not too long ago when scrolling through Spotify that they let you put prompts as the creator. And I would love to hear from you. So please just get in touch. Let's get involved. I am so excited that you are even listening, and I really, really, really hope that this inspires you to get out and do that damn thing. Go do everything that scares you. You are way more capable than you think you are. I promise you. Again, friends, thank you so much for listening. Go do that thing. I will see you very soon. Bye.